Please stand by. Night school starts in just a few minutes. Night school starts at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. We'll be underway in just a few minutes. Listening to Night School. We'll be underway. The bell will ring in just a few minutes.
Ring the bell. It's time for Night School, the racing industry's national online fan education and player development program. Here's your host, Jeremy Plunk.
And a very good evening, Night Schoolers. I'm Jeremy Plunk from Horse Player Now, joining you for one of our favorite lessons of the 40-week season each year. It's our sixth annual Preakness and Black-Eyed Susan Handicapping Seminar, and we've got three great guests for you tonight, two that you're very familiar with in the Night School program, and a first-time student or instructor to class tonight, Stan Salter from the Maryland Jockey Club and Maryland Horse Radio. We'll get to Stan in just a second, but I want to set the table for what we're going to do tonight. We're going to look at the Black-Eyed Susan Day card on Friday from Old Hilltop, as well as the big one, the Preakness Stakes, on Saturday from Pimlico Racecourse. Middle jewel of the Triple Crown as Nyquist looks to punch his ticket towards a potential back-to-back Triple Crown. But are we getting ahead of ourselves? We'll talk to Stan about that. Also coming up in the second segment tonight, Steve Bick. He will be in the analyst role tonight as I host the program. Steve checking in from Baltimore. And then Caton Bradar will be with us in the final segment to talk about the Derby horses, the carryover, and what we've seen from the Derby to the Preakness and what we might expect. So a great panel of guests tonight. We want to give you a couple items of business for you this week. Note that our Woodbine Wednesdays live chats and podcasts begin tomorrow night. Our first Woodbine Wednesdays of the Night School season begin tomorrow with the evening program at Woodbine, 6:15 Eastern. Each Wednesday night, you'll be able to tune in and listen and play along with our experts as we go through the entire Woodbine card and get you set for those eight race programs every Wednesday night. So Night School's Woodbine Wednesdays kick off tomorrow. But it's Preakness Week, and without further ado, we bring in Stan Salter, racing analyst for the Maryland Jockey Club. Stan, I first met you down in the Virginia Derby when you were working at Colonial Downs. Now you're up in Maryland, and you've been with the Maryland Horse Racing Radio Program for several years now. No stranger to the Maryland scene. Does the Preakness ever get old?
No, it never gets old. I mean, this is our special week, or our special month, or our special time of the year. I have, you know, fond memories of it going back to it when I was a kid, and then, you know, growing up in the sport and now working in the sport, you study it, and, you know, you look at the history all the way back to when it started in the late 1800s, and, of course, Pimlico is the second oldest racetrack in the country, so a lot of history and charm to Pimlico. Even though it's an old structure, there's a lot of old world charm to it, and Baltimore being the home of the Preakness is a lot of roots there. And of course, you know, horse racing in Maryland, you know, we started horse racing back in the 1700s down in Annapolis, so you know, the history and heritage of horse racing in Maryland is pretty special, and we get to kind of show it on a world stage because you know, you think about it, you know, with the Kentucky Derby winner is, you know, the most famous racehorse in the world. You know, going into the end of the Derby, you have, you know, 20 horses going in there. You have the favorite, but you have a bunch of different horses. But after the Kentucky Derby, you know, it's been Nyquist on the front page of every horse racing paper and other papers, you know, around the world. So it's, you know, that puts Preakness in Baltimore, Maryland on an international world stage. And that's pretty cool. And especially when it's, you know, Team Doug O'Neill and they come to Baltimore with their Derby winner 2 days after winning the Derby, like they did with Nyquist. They came the Monday following their Derby win. That's the same formula they did with I'll Have Another. So it worked with I'll Have Another. And that's who I like in the Preakness. I like Nyquist, and I think he's been training beautifully out there at Pimlico. So to answer your question again now, the Preakness never gets old, and there's great stories about it this year.
With Nyquist, we have a horse who got to the Derby late from training at Keeneland, didn't work over the racetrack, and didn't feel the need to necessarily get to Churchill Downs early. But like you mentioned, they got to Pimlico just a couple days after the Derby victory, followed that same path as Nyquist, as someone who follows the Maryland racing circuit on a day-to-day basis. Do you think an affinity for that racetrack is a must, or is it a track that horses transfer the form pretty universally towards?
Well, shippers do well. I mean, we have a lot of horses that ship down from New York. Linda Rice, she wins at about 30% shipping down here from New York, and horses that she ship down from Fair Hill. A lot of horses ship down from Parks. So I think it's a fair track. Bob Baffert, he normally ships in, and of course his Preakness horse Collected shipped in this afternoon out there. So he normally ships in this week, and you know, of course, all the, you know, look at all the success he's had. So I think it, you know, you want to say, yeah, sure, it gives him a big advantage, you know, get him here the day after the Kentucky Derby. But I think it's a fair racetrack where you can ship in late and have success. If I was a trainer or an owner, I would, you know, err on the side of caution, and I think that's what Doug O'Neill does. Back in the old days, you know, they would come here right after the Derby.
Right.
Nick Zito was famous for that because, you know, the Pimlico Special would be the week before the Preakness, so they would come right after the Derby with, you know, the special horses and the Preakness horses. So Nick Zito, he always used to like to show up early. So I guess it's just preference. And it becomes a logistical thing and business thing with, you know, shipping these horses around, and can you get a flight? Can you get a van here? So a lot of that factors into it as well.
That's a really good point. And with the Derby winner, we have that inherent storyline every year with the Preakness. That's one of the great draws about it. You know, you can get to Belmont and not have a Triple Crown on the line. You rarely get to the Preakness without a Triple Crown on the line. You've got to go back to a Grindstone getting injured in 1996 and not making it onto the Preakness, or Spendabuck opting not to run in the Preakness back in 1985, something that would just kind of be thought of as unheard of today. But he had a big bonus to run at in the Jersey Derby back in 1985 for our newer fans. That's why Spendabuck didn't move on to Pimlico. But that built-in marketing ability, it's really got to help you guys to get that horse on the grounds early like you have.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. Joe DeFrancis, he told me this a long time ago. You know, the Preakness has something the Kentucky Derby will never have. We have the Kentucky Derby winner. So, you know, like going into the Kentucky Derby, sure, Nyquist and Exaggerator, they were the favorites, and they got a lot of press, and they were on the front pages of a lot of newspapers, but there was 20 different horses. And so, you know, after the Kentucky Derby, you have the winner, and, I mean, you can arguably say that's the most famous and most talked about, you know, that's the horse, you know, Nyquist was trending, of course, on social media after the Kentucky Derby. That's the most famous horse in the world for 2 weeks leading up to the Preakness. So I think that's, yeah, from a marketing standpoint, that's huge. And, yeah, I remember that 85 Spendabuck debacle. That was, man, there was a lot of controversy and a lot of deals behind the scenes getting made back then. That was pretty wild.
The Preakness steeped in so much history, from the fillies like Rachel Alexandra and Genuine Risk versus Codex back in 1980 to more current times, Pat Day running the table in 94, 95, 96, and then what we saw last year, Magical with American Pharoah. Stan, go back to last year's Preakness for just a moment. We'll get into the handicapping nuts and bolts, but really want to... Your memories of last year's Preakness with the deluge and just the absolute monsoon that came through as the horses were getting saddled and what we saw with American Pharoah, what were your takeaways maybe from that day and then after this horse was crowned Triple Crown winner? What do you take away from 2015?
Well, first of all, let me say that I'm so happy that you guys are going to be back there this year doing the Wager in 101 because it's a much needed, valuable tool out there. The fans and the bettors and the casual fans that want to learn, you know, they crave coming up and asking questions and learning how to bet and just having a good time. So you know, you guys weren't there last year. Me and Jackie Savoy, who's now a trainer at Pimlico, and she works with me on Mail and Horse Radio a little bit, but we were kind of tasked to go out there at the last minute. In the tent that where you guys will be out this year, so that's we were out there all year and it was we had a great crowd and the rain kind of drove everybody into our tent to watch American Pharoah, and it was just it was kind of a wild drunk scene for me. So it's awesome you guys are coming back this year because you guys. You know, you guys do a great job. You have a following out there, and you brought up the. I mean, back in my Pat Day Preakness days when I was hammering out in the infield, you know, that was my scene. I think, I don't know, Jeremy, I must be getting old or something because you know I was a little hitching my giddy up the next morning after being out there in the infield all day. But no, I had a good time. It was it was kind of like taking me back to my roots because. Literally, me and all my buddies in high school, we're going to have horses someday. We're going to call it Lax Leather Stable. But so we started going to the Preakness Enfield our senior year of high school in 94. And we went 94, 95, 96, I think all the way to like 99, 2000. And people started moving away and getting married and all. But so we were out in the infield during those Pat Day years. And so last year kind of brought me back to those memories because I was right out there in the heart of it. And then, So I'm glad you guys are back out there this year.
Hey, I'm kind of glad we missed last year with the monsoon in the infield, to be honest with you. The way it worked out, there was a little divine intervention at least.
we were the popular spot, yeah. I mean, we had a good crowd all day, as I'm sure you guys will as well. I mean, it's a great idea. We actually got a good write-up on it from the writer on the Thoroughbred Daily News. In fact, that they said we should have more wagering 101 tents out there in the infield. I agree. So I mean, I think it's a great idea that it's out there. So we had, but yeah, when that rain came, Jeremy, I mean, everybody came in and there was I think the beer was still flowing, so everybody was happy and in a good mood.
Good,
but American Pharoah, just him. You know, going to the front, I like that strategy. They weren't messing around. He went right to the front. You know, Victor rode him like he was the best horse in the race, and he was. And so it was that was pretty awesome. Oh, the power went out for a little bit, and everyone started booing, and then it came back on. So that could have been interesting, but luckily it came right back on.
You talked about Victor Espinosa just taking the race to, the competition with American Pharoah last year, and we forget that, you know, Dortmund was an awfully good rival in that race, firing line. There were other horses who had some speed on paper, but American Pharoah assumed command of that race and just took control of it as the best horse. Let's get into this year's Preakness. Do you think Nyquist and jockey Mario Gutierrez should employ a similar strategy, and will they just go up and be part of the mix, or is there too much other speed in this Preakness for them to try that?
You know, good question, and the weather might be a factor. You look at you start looking at the extended forecast for Saturday, and a couple of days ago it was looking like it was going to be nice, like in the 70s and sunny, but now you're looking at it might be rainy on Saturday. I think that might step them both up. Of course, Exaggerator wanted to see him in the Derby in the mud, but, you know, that was an off track down there for the Florida Derby, that Nyquist won on. And Doug O'Neill said that one of his other races was on and off track. So, and with Nyquist having that positional tactical speed and just kind of being, you know, such a beautiful, flawless mover, the off track, I think, could maybe step him up just as much as Exaggerator. So, if it's an off track like last year's Preakness, will the temptation, you know, be to, you know, automatically go with Nyquist right to the front like American Pharoah? I don't know. That'll be up to the, you know, Doug and Mario and the whole team. But he could probably do it with the speed he has. But you know, he got the perfect trip, that perfect outside stalking trip in the Derby. It was a beautiful ride by Mario. I mean, I like him in the Derby. I like him in the Preakness. I'm going to bet him in the Preakness. I'm going to bet Doug O'Neill, Black Eyed Susan Preakness, daily double, because I think I love Doug O'Neill's silly land up receiving it in the Black Eyed Susan. I'm a Nyquist guy, and I would love to see him get that outside stalking trip like he got in the Kentucky Derby. But if it's an off track like last year, and you know, and the way American Pharoah did it, I don't know. That would be interesting. Exaggerators do. He's going to come from the clouds. And,
right.
You know, talking to Doug O'Neill listening to Doug O'Neill this morning in the press conference, he kind of said that. You know, Nyquist always kind of gets, you know, not Exaggerator's consistent. He's going to come with his run, but Nyquist always kind of gets the head start on him. So. That'll be. I think weather is going to play, and track condition might play a factor in what happens early on in the race.
No doubt, weather is a big concern for everyone right now. Forecast for 90%, even 100% chance of rain. They're saying at some point on Saturday or throughout the day. Very realistic. If you're handicapping ahead, my advice is for Friday and Saturday. If the races are listed on the turf and they're not a major stakes race, there's a very legitimate chance they won't stay on the turf. So handicap with that in mind, and don't get married to a horse based on their firm turf form, because it's unlikely we're going to get that Friday and Saturday. But again, have a plan A and a plan B if you're handicapping ahead. Stan, if the track is sloppy, and then we'll get off of that topic and move to some other factors, but if the track is sloppy for Preakness Day, are you making Exaggerator more of a contender, or do you feel that Nyquist just has his number after beating him four times?
I know. I'll still go with the Nyquist, because, like I said, I was an off-track down there for the Florida Derby. You know, look at Mohamed, he didn't like it at all, but, you know, mm-hmm. It was nothing, you know, Nyquist loved it, and I don't have a Nyquist cut in front of me, but listening to Doug O'Neill this morning, it was the Florida Derby, I think one other race he was talking about that might have been an off-track that you know, he won on.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's good enough for me right there. That's good enough for me right there to say, hey, you know, the off-track might step up Nyquist just as well. I think, yes, it does step up Exaggerator. Yes, I think it does step up Exaggerator's game. Absolutely. He was dominant in that Santa Anita Derby. So, yeah, it makes Exaggerator better, but I think it makes the Kentucky Derby champ better too, Nyquist. And with that, you know, with that early tactical positional speed, he can do whatever he wants. That's the thing. He can do whatever he wants. So if there is an off-track, everybody knows that Nyquist can go right to the front if they want to, just like American Pharoah did. Everybody will know that. But, you know, they might be, you know, there'll be some other horses, I think, that have speed in there. I think this Fletcher horse that everybody's saying is the next man of war, Stradivari,
right.
Everybody said he's, you know, a freak. And so I think he's a speed horse. Awesome speed, you know, the Alan Goldberg horse that won the Federico Tessio, he's a forwardly placed horse. So, you know, from a guy who's on Nyquist, camp and is betting Nyquist, I would love to see, you know, Nyquist get that perfect, sitting second or third stalking trip like he did in the Derby.
Last three Kentucky Derby winners had that exact same trip. California Chrome had that trip, sitting third, moved, made the lead after a mile, extended it through the stretch. The same thing happened the following year with American Pharoah, almost identical trips. And then this year with Nyquist just 2 weeks ago, had that exact cut and paste kind of trip. That was a winning formula in the Derby. We'll see if it continues with the Preakness. You're listening to Night School's Preakness Preview for 2016. Stan Salter from the Maryland Jockey Club in Maryland Maryland Horse Radio, joining us tonight. First time in night school. Glad to have him along with us tonight for about the next 10 or 12 minutes through till we get through the first break. Stan, we're going to get some questions from the fans in the chat and see what they're looking for. Is there going to be more speed, you think, in this race to contend with for Nyquist? Colonel Mike is one of our chatters, is saying, you know, he thinks the pace is going to be tougher in the Preakness than it was in the Derby. You subscribe to that?
Well, the Fletcher horse might have something to say about that. And to be honest with you, I just heard about this horse. Everybody tells me how good he is. Everybody tells me how freaky good that win at Keeneland was. I guess he got a big number down there. And I asked my on-air co-host, Gabby Gaudette, if he's a speed horse. And I'm pretty sure she said, he goes right to the front. So
right.
Is that the game with Stradivari?
He's going to be pretty forwardly placed. I mean, his two races, he's shown the good pace, and I would expect him to be part of that phalanx of horses, you know, in the first flight. I don't think he's quite the speed horse of, Lauban or somebody like that, who, you know, you just know is committed on going to the front. And so this Uncle Lino, another horse with, you know, the post position draw is going to be interesting. We're looking at a potential field of 11 for the Preakness after Gun Runners Connections and Dazzling Gem declared today. Neither is going to go on to the Preakness. You will see Dazzling Gem likely on the undercard in the Sir Barton on Saturday at Pimlico. And then Gun Runner will wait for another day, maybe a summer campaign towards something like the Haskell, where Gun Runner would be very, very strong. I think he was kind of just waiting in the weeds with Steve Asmussen to see if something happened to the big horse, Nyquist, then Gun Runner comes to this race and is probably second choice in the betting, and they want to run. But nothing happened with Nyquist. That horse, Gunrunner, does not do well on a sloppy track at all. Ran very poorly last year in the Kentucky Jockey Club in the slop at Churchill, the worst race of his career by far. So with the forecast and with Nyquist still in the race, it made sense that Gunrunner would drop out. Taking some more questions from the folks in the chat. They're asking about who has done well on the off track. Stan mentioned, you know, Exaggerator. Cherry Wine has a really nice win by 9 lengths, breaking his maiden at Churchill on an off track. And the other horse to win in the slop was the horse coming in from Parks. And the horse from Parks, stand, they cleared quarantine today. Abiding Star is his name. He's kind of an 11th-hour entry into this race. They're going to make some concessions for him and safety precautions on the backstretch so that the horse coming from Parks, where that viral quarantine was in place since April and just lifted earlier today, they're going to put him in a separate area from some of the other horses just to make things, you know, safe and for caution. How have you seen horses from Parks fare generally when they come over to the Maryland circuit? Is that not just this horse for the Preakness? Because we know he's stepping up in class. But generally speaking, do the Parks horses, for our fans handicapping the undercard, do they come over and transfer their form?
Yes, they do. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. The Preciados, they come down there. They do well. Abiding Stars trainer, Ned Allard, he comes down here with runners. There's a handful of other trainers up there. Alan Goldberg, he's stable on the far enough up in New Jersey, but Patricia and Mike Farrow, a bunch of trainers from Parks do come down here and do well. Of course, John Service. So to answer that question, yes. The Park shippers are definitely live. And talking about Abiding Star, he is a very, very nice horse. He's won 5 in a row. And going back to the question about, you know, the speed and the early speed in the Preakness, Abiding Star will have something to say about that as well. He's a front runner, and he's a nice horse. I mean, he's a horse that kind of took a while to get good. Ned Allard, who's a very good old school trainer, he trained Mom's Command back in the 80s, who was a champion. He dropped this horse, made Abiding Star. He dropped the horse in for maiden 40. The horse won. And the horse won an allowance race and then won the private terms at a big price at Laura Park and then was going to run in the Federico Tessio, but that's when the quarantine happened up at Parks. And then he went on and won 2 races up there, an allowance race and then the Parks Derby most recently. So he's a very, very nice horse. He's by Uncle Mo, same sire as Nyquist. And, you know, look how red hot Uncle Mo is as a sire. And I think that's a real nice horse, Abiding Star, that we just got news today that he's coming. And, Sal Sinatra, general manager of the Maryland Jockey Club, they're doing all the precautions for him. They're building him his own barn over there on the opposite side of all the other state sources. So no concerns there, and I think it's great that we're going to have him in the Preakness.
We'd be remiss if we didn't get the local track handicappers' take on the horses from the Federico Tessio Stakes. That was a race where Awesome Speed was involved in that race and won it by DQ. The Tessio for years has been at Pimlico and was the local prep towards the Preakness, but with the dates changing a little bit this year, the Tessio was run at Laurel Park and not over the track at Pimlico. Awesome Speed won that race by disqualification. How do you translate him over to Pimlico and the Preakness? Is he a serious threat in this race or a fringe player?
I love Awesome Speed a lot. As much as I just talked well about Abiding Star, I like Awesome Speed even more. I've liked this horse all along. Full disclosure here, I liked him when he broke his maiden over the winter time at Laurel. He was about 8-9-1 or something. He's an impeccably bred horse. You buy Awesome again, he's out of an aptitude mare. He's comes from a very, very nice family on the dam side. We know Awesome again can throw a big time horse. So I followed him since he broke his maiden over the winter time at Laurel. He won a stake race at Laurel over the winter time, and then a very impressive stakes win in the Mucho Macho Man down there. And his two races since then, he's been battle tested. The poor guy's been banged around in the Fountain of Youth. He got knocked so hard going under the wire the first time going into the first turn. I mean, he got knocked so hard for him to even finish the race, and he finished it with some respect. He didn't pack it in. He was still running at the end. That was the race Mohamed won down there. And talking to Alan Goldberg, he was a little jammed up for a couple of days after that race, after getting banged hard in the Fountain of Youth. But they regrouped him and got him going well again. And then he ran a big-time race, I thought, in the Federico Tessio. And then what happened? He's been fun. He's going to win. He's absolutely going to win because when horses come to him, he fights on. He did that his maiden win. He did that his first stakes win last January at Laurel. He had a horse coming to his inside, to his outside. I mean, when he gets headed, he doesn't let horses pass him. So he was absolutely going to win that Tessio. He got banged so hard by the horse coming over, it threw him onto his left lead. I'm glad, he had it was. I'm sure he came out of the race good and he's been training well, or else he wouldn't be coming to Preakness. But
right.
I'm glad that I think it was like 6 weeks from the Tessio to the Preakness because he got banged again pretty hard in the Tessio. But I like that horse again. And if it's a muddy track, we know the Awesome Agains like the muddy track. But look what Oxbow did.
Let's get Stan's opinions on the Friday card quickly. We know you like Land Over Sea in the Black Eyed Susan for Doug O'Neill. In fact, you're calling the Doug O'Neill Preakness Black Eyed Susan double. Someone in the chat asked just a little while ago if there are any days connecting or any wagers connecting both days. Yes, there is a daily double from the Black Eyed Susan to the Preakness. So you can make that wager. Stan, there's no pick three using the Dixie, or is there?
Pick three using the Dixie, that's a good question. What was the Black Eyed Susan and the Preakness and the Dixie? I haven't seen that. There could be, but
yeah, we'll check on that, and if we get it, we'll put it in the chat a little bit later. Someone had that question there, and I don't recall seeing that either, but I know for sure we definitely have the Daily Double going from Friday to Saturday. That's the Black Eyed Susan Preakness Double, so you can play that. Hey, Stan, give us a horse on the Friday card you're looking forward to.
And the Black Eyed Susan, that also came off the $400,000 guaranteed late pick four on Friday, and race eight, which is the Jim McKay Turf Sprint. That's the race that the 10-year-old Ben's Cat is going to be trying to win for the fifth time. I'll talk about him in a second, but the Jim McKay Turf Sprint kicks off the $300,000 pick four on Black Eyed Susan Day. Then, of course, on Preakness Day, you have the $2 million late pick four on Preakness Day and the $1 million late pick five on Preakness Day. But the Black Eyed Susan Preakness Daily Double, what's that going to pay, Jeremy? Because I'm going to make a serious wager on this. I saw Land Over Sea galloping out there this morning. The trainer, Doug O'Neill, of course, she was the runner-up to Catherine Sophia in the Kentucky Oaks, and she looked like an absolute gorilla out there this morning. She looked sensational. It was a strong spirited gallop. She did it in hand. She came back looking, you know, like she hadn't done anything. She looks really, really good. What a consistent filly she is. 2-1. I mean, I mean, if we can get 2-1 on her, I think that's a nice price.
I'll give you 960 on that double for two. 7-2 proposition. How's that sound?
Landover C with Nyquist is 920?
960 I'll give you. I'll give you a couple extra dimes.
Okay, 960. All right, that's worth it. All right.
All right.
I do a $200 double, I get 960 back. Okay, all right, that'll work. That'll work. All right, a couple other horses I like, of course. Back to the Jim McKay Turf Sprint. We got to talk about the 10-year-old Ben's Cat, trained by the Hall of Famer King T. Leatherberry bred this horse. He owns this horse. Leatherberry, you know, bred and owned the dam and the dam sire, 38 paces. Ben's Cat, the 10-year-old, he came back to the races May 1st at Laurel Park. He hasn't lost a step. That was a very, very tough, wide-open allowance race, and he ran down the front runner to win by a neck at the end. He got a 93 buyer in that race. That put him over $2.5 million in earnings. He now has 31 lifetime wins now as a 10-year-old. I think he's very, very close to passing Broad Brush on the all-time Maryland bred money list. I think Broad Brush is right above him right now. He's the number two in race eight. That's the Jim McKay Turf Sprint. I'm not crazy about the inside post. I don't like the inside post at all in these turf sprints. And Ben's Caddy does his best running when he comes with a rally on the far outside. That said, perhaps one of his best races was the Jim McKay Turf Sprint last year. He got a 105 buyer. That's his best ever buyer. And I'm sure you remember that race. That's when he came on the inside of Bold Thunder and got up by a nose or a neck, it says here, you know, on the inside. So he can do it anyway. He can jump over horses and win. He's 9-5. There's some real, real tough horses in there. I hear this Rocket Heat horse is a freak, trained by Von Belvoir, the Frenchman, Flavian Pratt. This horse has got a 105 down there, I guess, Derby weekend down there at Churchill in the grade three down there. He's fast, but there's some other speed in the race, so that's good. I think the Rapid Dan is very quick. Big Guy Ian is very quick. So hopefully I'm a Ben's Cat guy. I picked Ben's Cat on top in there. Hopefully you get the Rocket Heat, get headed a little bit early on and set it up for Ben's Cat. And then my long shot of the day comes in race nine, the grade three Allaire or DuPont Distaff, a mile and an eighth. It's $150,000 grade three. My long shot of the day is number seven. This is a wide open grade three, I think. It's why several horses have a good shot in here. And I like number seven, America. 15-1 for the Hall of Famer, Billy Ma. It's 5-year-old by AP Indy. She's a five-time winner. She's made over $500,000. She just won a grade three, wire-to-wire grade three winner last October up at Belmont in a grade three, got a 93 buyer in that. And that was after a tough, tough campaign of running in grade ones, grade twos all last year at Saratoga and Delaware and Churchill. She didn't run very good after after winning the grade three in October. She didn't run very well in the Gopher Wand in late November in Aqueduct. She was wide in there. And just, you know, maybe it was just at the end of a long 4-year-old campaign. They gave her the winner off. They brought her back in the grade three top flight up at Aqueduct April 10th. It was one of those weird four-horse fields. She was third, got beat 16 lengths in there. You know, she could have easily needed one as a 5-year-old. Billy Mott's 24% now, second off this kind of layoff. He's the Hall of Famer. You look at the work. Since that comeback race on April 10th, she has worked 1, 2, 3, 4 times, a nice series of works, a couple of nice 5-8 works. This is a mare that just won a grade three last October, got a 93 buyer. Junior Alvarado has won on her three times. Three of her five wins have been with Junior Alvarado. He's back aboard her today. He's won on her going right to the front, and he's won on her coming from behind. So I think there's lots of things to like about her, and I love the 15-1 price on her. So that's number seven, America, in race nine, the grade three DuPont.
All right, good stuff on the Friday card from Stan Salter at Laurel Park. You have the toughest job in America. You get to work with Gabby Gaudette. So it's a tough assignment, but someone has to do it.
Yeah, Gabby, I'm very lucky. She's very talented, and she's pleasant to be with. And, you know, she's paid her dues in this game, you know, growing up in horse racing. And, you know, she's galloped for a bunch of trainers in Maryland and around the place. So, you know, we're all very proud of her and happy for her. She's doing a good job. Somebody just knocking on my door, but this is nothing. This is live radio here. Gabby's doing a great job.
We will let Stan go. He's got somebody at the door. Hopefully it's not his bill collector. We've got betting to do this weekend. It's the Preakness and Stan Salter. Look forward to seeing you at the Alibi Breakfast on Thursday and all weekend, pal. Thanks for joining us tonight in Night School.
Okay. All right. I sent him away if we have any more questions, but if we're all done, thank you very much for having me on. We look forward to having you out there in the infield again this year, Jeremy.
Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
We'll be right back in Night School with our second segment in just a moment.
Night School is brought to you by the American Quarter Horse Association, home of the fastest athletes. For more, visit AQHA.com. And by Keeneland Select, the official online wagering home of the historic Keeneland Racecourse. Sign up and get a $150 bonus and enjoy no-fee online wagering.
Strategize, analyze, select. Join Keeneland Select to bet on racing from around the world on your computer, tablet, or smartphone, anytime, anywhere. Featuring the best rewards in racing, free pass performances, live video, race replays, and more. Plus, Keeneland Select invests a portion of its profits back into the sport. Join Keeneland Select today and earn a $150 sign-up bonus at KeenelandSelect.com. Dedicated to the sport and dedicated to the players.
Looking for some excitement? Get away to Mountaineer Casino Racetrack and Resort. The gaming action sizzles, from slots to video poker to hot table game action. There's more winning excitement at Mountaineer. Stay in our newly renovated hotel rooms. Enjoy new menus in 6 restaurants. Heat up your nights with live entertainment. Play a round of golf. Enjoy the thrills of live thoroughbred racing or relax in our spa. Get in on it all at Mountaineer. Mountaineer Casino Racetrack and Resort, West Virginia Lottery, West Virginia Lottery Table Games.
Next on FAQ 60, the morning line. The morning line odds are not a prediction of each horse's probability of winning a race. Rather, they're a prediction of how the public will bet the race. Once betting begins, the morning line odds are replaced with the actual odds. There are two ways you can use morning line odds to your advantage. First, the morning line helps a horse player determine overlay or underlay values. If a horse's current odds are over the projected morning line odds, that's an overlay, and it can be a great value bet. Second, morning line odds are significant to players making multi-race bets like the Daily Double and Pick 4. Those early morning line projections often attract the most money in the multi-race pools, which decreases your potential payout. This FAQ 60 is presented by AQHA Racing and Horse Player Now. For more, go to AQHARacing.com.
Mike, the morning line is supposed to be a projection of what the off odds will be for the public. How tough is that?
Well, you know, you kind of have to be a mind reader. And it's different races are tougher, just like handicapping races. Making the line is different for every race. Sometimes there's a standout favorite. Sometimes there isn't. Now, you know, you take the Kentucky Derby, of course. That's always the toughest because you've got 20 horses. You never know who's going to be the hot horse. It's very tough. I've been making the morning line for the Derby since 1975. And I tell you, it gets tougher every year.
With the small field, the big field, how much does that go into it? Obviously, the math and the points are changed drastically.
Well, no, the points are the same. No matter if it's an 8-horse field or 20-horse field, you just have to adjust to come up with the same number. I like to use around 126. I can go a little bit higher, a little bit lower, but I like to use around 126. So some people use lower. I've found that the higher line, for me, works better. What I like to do is when the race is over, I like to look, see, you know, how close I was, how it came, and I found out with the higher line, when I look at it at the end, I've usually am better off than with the lower one.
Behind the scenes, putting the line together, how early do you have to do it?
It, again, depends on the day we draw. For the Derby, you do it earlier, and makes it a little bit tougher, to be honest with you. For the whole Derby Day card, it makes it tougher because they want it immediately. Normally, say we'll draw for a Saturday. We'll draw for Saturday on a Wednesday, and then I'll have to have the line by Thursday morning at like 8 o'clock, so I got plenty of time to do it. And how long it takes, it can take as little as an hour and a half, as long as 3 hours, depending on the card again.
Night School is proudly presented each week by Woodbine Entertainment, featuring Woodbine Racetrack and Mohawk Raceway. The 2016 Thoroughbred Racing season runs April through December, and by Mountaineer Casino Racetrack and Resort, home of the Grade 2 West Virginia Derby, to be held this summer on August 6th.
We're going to get our next guest, Steve Bick, on live with us in Night School in just a moment. Until we do, let's go back and listen to Larry Comas' call, courtesy of NBC Sports, of the Kentucky Derby win by Nyquist.
Nyquist coming out of stall 13. They're all in line. They're off in the Kentucky Derby. Nyquist had a good beginning. Lonnie, the Japanese bull, is away last. Dancing Candy on the far outside is out well, and so is Cut Runner from the inside. Nyquist between those two, outwork is close, and then comes Shagoff, and they're followed by Moore Spirit on the far outside. Whitmore is after that. In between horses is Tom's Ready. Down toward the inside, Oscar nominated next with one lap to run. And then comes Mahesto, followed by Destin to the inside. Mohamed is racing about 10 lengths off the ladies, down on the inside of horses, moving around that turn and right alongside of Brody's Cause. 5 lengths back to My Man Sam, Exaggerator, and Kent DeSormo, well off the pace here. And then comes Motom. Lottie's gone by a few. Creator is next by another 5. Then sudden breaking news. And Trojan Nation, the maiden is last in the quarter mile, was at 45 and 3/5 seconds. And Dancing Candy wings up the backstretch in front, setting a solid pace which could help these late closers here. Dancing Candy in front by 2.5 lengths under Mike Smith, with Gunrunner running in second on the inside. The undefeated Nyquist is right there, third to the outside. Break of another 2 to outwork in fourth. Victor Espinosa is down on the rail with Whitmore. They're 4.5 lengths off the lead. Then it's Tom's Ready, Destin, and Oscar nominated on the inside as the field makes their way around the far turn. 3/4 win at 1:10-2. And it is Dancing Candy in front by a neck. And here's Florent Giroux and Gunrunner, and they take the lead on the far turn. Nyquist is right in contention, and he's next to Gunrunner. And then it's a 4-length gap back to Destin, who has rallied into third. Mohamed is coming on too, and they're into the stretch, and it's Nyquist. Nyquist has taken the lead on the outside. Gunrunner, second at the rail, 5 lengths back to Destin in third. And they come to the final furlong. Exaggerator is closing in. Nyquist to catch with a 16th to go. Gunrunner, Exaggerator on the outside. Nyquist and Exaggerator, they're coming to the line together. And Nyquist is still unbeaten. He has won the Kentucky Derby. Exaggerator was second, and then a photo for third among sudden breaking news. And Gunrunner, and the final time was swift. 2 minutes, 1.31 seconds, set by a brilliant...
We are back in Night School, and if Larry Comas' call doesn't get you pumped up towards the Preakness, I'm not sure what will. He was juiced at the end of that one. Steve Bick joins us now, and Steve, we've had 2 weeks to digest the Kentucky Derby and everything that we saw at Churchill Downs. Give us your postscript on the Derby and what you made of Nyquist, and specifically Nyquist versus Exaggerator.
Well, I had a little bit of a different approach to Derby to begin with, in that I had great respect for the favorite, for the 2-year-old champion. I've had, you know, all throughout the winter and the spring lead up. But from a wagering standpoint, I wanted to try to swing for the fences in case we got a chaotic result. But at the same time, had every opportunity and suggestion to include the top two. And so, you know, in terms of an approach, from a wagering standpoint, which is the first priority, needed to get sudden breaking news third to cash a ticket that way.
Right.
But other than that, I was actually very surprised that we ended up with as formful a result as we got. Because under any circumstance, even in a year where you have a big ground or a dominant type of a favorite that shows up at Churchill, you still are going to scour the field looking for potential prices to build your tickets.
Right.
For us to get a 1-2-3-4 order of finish based on the mutuals, it was just, to me, astounding. It was virtually the one result I would never have foreseen. So from that standpoint, it was surprising because it was so formful.
Well, to my research, I've never found another Derby where the 1-2-3-4 public choices in order ran 1-2-3-4 ever in a 7-horse Derby and a 4-horse Derby back in the 1800s. It hasn't happened, and there was one year where it was disputable that you could say it happened because a mutual field was involved that like 6 horses combined to be the third choice in the race. But 4 separate wagering interests have never run 1-2-3-4 in order. So we salute the public, and now we move on to the middle jewel of the Triple Crown, Stephen, a race that typically has been more formful. But like you mentioned, even if you have a standout favorite, you can still get some boxcar exotics. If you were able to ferret out Divining Rod in third and Tale of Verve behind American Pharoah last year, you were paid handsomely even in a smaller field than what we're going to see on Saturday. A field of 11 expected to enter tomorrow. That holding up with everything you've heard news-wise, no changes to the field at this point, we think?
As far as we could tell, you don't even have to be as creative as Tale of Verve and Divining Rod, because there's horses almost every year in this race that invade at least the triple. A horse like Ride on Curlin a couple of years ago,
mm-hmm.
You think about him, second to California Chrome. The other day, this topic came up, and I brought out one of the best scores that I've had at a Preakness, which was Midway Road. It was 20-1 behind Funnyside, and who I kind of, you know, sniffed out and ended up, you know, cashing not as well in the Preakness as I had in the Derby because I loved Funnyside. But there's this opportunity, it seems, on a regular basis. First Dude behind Looking at Lucky is another one that comes to mind, and on. I mean, almost every single Preakness, you'll find a horse that is double digits and who boosts the triple, and if you get two of them, you're guaranteed of a sizable super potentially. And instead of spreading liberally at smaller increments like we do with the Derby, this is maybe the spot where you heavy up a little bit, and you know, those that very rarely do, you know, $2, $5 triples and supers, this may be your opportunity.
Steve Bick from SiriusXM's At the Races with Steve Bick, and of course our longtime Night School co-host, joining us on the other end of the podcast tonight. Just a little tech difference with Steve on the road in Baltimore this week, and I'll be joining you on Thursday down there. What have you seen in the mornings, the buzz around the stable area, the people you've talked to, the many interviews you've done? Has there been a narrative that has kind of changed with some of these horses, or do we kind of know what we know about them at this point? Is anybody moving or trending in a plus or minus direction?
I wouldn't say that there's anything post-Derby that is new and different. Obviously, concern about the weather for Saturday is going to get people in that frame of mind that Exaggerator may get the kind of racetrack he's been looking for to upset, to turn the tables and finally beat Nyquist. I don't know if that's the case at all, but the lack of horses out of Derby that are involved here, that changes, you know, the whole discussion point. because other than Lanny and Exaggerator, we've lost everybody at this point. And Gunrunner, I thought he would run back. But frankly, the decisions that we're getting from Donnie Von Hemel with sudden breaking news and you know, so forth, even Dazzling Jem, who was not a Derby participant, the fact that they're all backing off, that is in deference to the favorite. And mm-hmm. I suppose in deference to the favorite and the second choice. But other than that, I think, you know, there's a bit of a buzz, an expectation that somehow Stradivari in a fourth career start, he's going to pull a red bullet and beat Fusaichi Pegasus in this case. So when it comes to Nyquist, I don't see it, you know, mm-hmm. especially because we're looking at a group of horses with a ton of speed. And even though we lost a horse like Chap Azteca, today we picked up a Biting Star.
Right.
And not only does he, you know, augment, I mean, he's probably, you know, even speedier and more interested in the front end. So we've got a lot of pace. And so for the people that are trying to project horses like Collected and Stradivari, and I suppose even Awesome Speed out of respect to Alan Goldberg and Rich Santulli, I don't see it. I mean, you got five confirmed front runners here.
Right.
That are going to be grappling for the lead. How do they not cancel each other out? I think we want horses that are going to be, you know, tucked in behind, like Nyquist, obviously. And then from there, you know, figure out who you want, Exaggerator and Cherry Wine, in terms of coming from off the pace. We'll see. I mean, I'd like to know if I could figure out who else is going to take a stalking role, if possible, or you know, set up in a mid-pack, you know, kind of a mid-pack behind the, you know, the Vanguard kind of a trip.
I've got a little love for Cherry Wine in here as an underneath horse. I don't think he can win, but I think he's this year's tail of Verve. And if it's sloppy, we forget that, you know, this horse was like 0-5 when he broke his maiden by 9 lengths in the slop. And after he had that big win at Churchill in the fall, you said, well, is he just a mud freak? Then he went and romped in his allowance race at Gulfstream in his 3-year-old debut. The Rebel Stakes has had a tremendous barometer and has been a tremendous producer of Preakness success in the last dozen years, going back to Smarty Jones, all the way through horses like Oxbow that you may not have expected, and of course last year American Pharaoh. So there has been a long line of horses where the Rebel in that mid-season has fit well. I think Cherry Wine is one of those, like you're talking about. There's so much speed in here, and a 1 3/16 is a long way to go. If we get a sloppy racetrack, Steve, how much do you think the Exaggerator factor gets piled on? I mean, he's not going to overtake Nyquist's favorite. No way, no shape, no how. But I wrote a little something today at expressbet.com about how Frisian Fire became the Kentucky Derby favorite just because of the sloppy track. He was fourth choice in the morning line, and everybody said Frisian Fire, he's the horse who's going to love the mud because he had won a couple races in the slop. He ended up beating one horse in the Kentucky Derby after everybody jumped on the mud wagon. I don't think the mud is going to certainly work against Exaggerator, but how much for him do you think it works?
It's hard to say. In fact, Andy Serling and I discussed this today. You know, first of all, every wet racetrack is different, and I don't mean just every wet racetrack from circuit to circuit, mm-hmm. from Churchill to Pimlico to Belmont to Santa Anita to Delta Downs. I mean even those wet racetracks at any point during the day over the course of either the soaking of or the drying out cycle of a wet racetrack. You don't know what you're going to get. Pimlico, for instance, is a very deep surface, and it always seems to be, you know, very deep and tiring for Preakness weekend. And when it gets wet, it gets kind of heavy and peanut buttery. There's no two wet racetracks that are the same. And when it comes to turf, when you are seeing a designation of, you know, firm to good to yielding to soft, those are a lot more defined than good, muddy, sloppy. There's no real way to know what kind of a wet racetrack you get. And it's silly to me to over-speculate and to overcompensate in your handicapping and your selections when you're worried about the wet track. It's one of those circumstances where you gauge your decision in as approximate timing as possible, meaning, you know, watch how the racetrack's playing, and if you want to add in a little bit to a horse that's got proven wet track ability, if it's a set of maidens, when that occurrence comes, you know, look for a pedigree and look for siblings, look for dams that have been, you know, strong over wet tracks. But I don't get the absolute hysteria over wet tracks. I mean, to me, when it came to the Derby even, it seemed that Exaggerator was being bet on Friday based on the speculation that we were going to have a wet track on Saturday afternoon. And, that didn't surprise me necessarily, but I never go overboard personally when it comes to wet track compensation.
No, I'm the same way, and if anything, I might peel back on my bets. I lose a little confidence, but there's no overplay for me on a horse that I think just moves up all of a sudden on a wet track, and I'm going to jump on it, because most of the time, everybody knows the same thing. They know they look at the numbers, you know, whether you use Briss or DRF or whatever, who gets the good mud ratings, who's had a good record over and off track, and those horses tend to get overbet. So I don't think there's any edge on jumping on a horse. If anything, you find a horse who may not like an off track, a horse who can't stand up on a wet track, and try to, you know, avoid them if anything at all, because that was the question Mike had in the chat about how do you look at a major day of racing with an anticipated sloppy track. One, I'm avoiding most of the undercard races that are on the turf, because they're probably going to come off the turf, Mike, and they'll preserve the turf course for the stakes races if you get a wet track a lot of times and wet grass. So yeah, for me, I might peel back my bets in some respects and then look and see and play the board. I might play fewer races, but bet just as much money on three races as I did normally, maybe going into it with five plays going into a day. I might end up with three. Steve, let's continue with some of your observations. You've been at Pimlico pretty much for the full McCoy since Derby wrapped up. Some folks are asking about horses and how they're training and why some are here and some aren't here. There have been a lot of questions about Lonnie. Lonnie has been at Belmont Park in Barclay Tags Barn for the past week or so. When does he arrive in Baltimore?
Well, everybody has to be here by Thursday, Thursday noon. So the arrangements for anybody that is getting late flights in, there's another flight coming from Louisville tomorrow, and then there'll be some horses that van down, including some of the Black Eyed Susan participants. Mike Trombetta's two fillies will come down from Fair Hill. Everybody's got to be here by Thursday, and I think Lanny is due here tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken. Dave Rennick, I'm trying to think of what Dave Rennick said today. I'm pretty sure tomorrow he's banning.
Still not there yet. So we haven't seen him over the track at Pimlico. And again, everybody's got to be there by Thursday noon. So follow Steve on Twitter, Steve Bick on Twitter, at Steve_Bick. And Steve will give good updates, I'm sure, if he sees anything in the mornings and on his show at the races on SiriusXM. Steve, what channel on SiriusXM for our listeners in the mornings?
Sirius 220. XM 206, Sports Zone, Sirius Online 964, and at our website too, steepbick.com.
Right, so the live show every morning go until noon Eastern, so you can listen in, and any of those updates folks are having questions about in the chat tonight, he'll get a look at Lonnie later in the week, and I'm sure you will hear all about it on those programs. A couple other horses that people have had some questions about, Steve. The Asmussen horse is not coming to the Preakness. Someone asked, you know, why would they work Creator after the Derby and come out and train and kind of gauge a horse like that and not move forward with him. To me, it seemed like a wait-and-see deal with the Asmussen horses. Let's see if the big horse Nyquist is going or not. If everything's good with Nyquist, we may not be going, and if Nyquist happens to drop out, then we've got some players to put in the mix. Any read on how Steve prepared his horses in the interim?
Well, the interesting thing that you find with Asmussen in general, his horses are not drilled for tremendous amounts of speed.
Mm-hmm.
They gallop aggressively during the weeks between races, and then typically will get very easy, whether it's a 102 five furlong work or a 50-second half mile. Steve Asmussen doesn't work his horses fast. He does like them to finish strongly and, you know, finish with a flourish and gallop out around the turn. But that's all maintenance stuff, basically, for Asmussen. You will not necessarily get, you know, real flares in terms of his workout patterns. That's just not the way the barn operates. They're letting their horses 2 minute lick, you know, pretty aggressively. And Creator and Gunrunner, you know, they had terrific lead ups to Derby. Creator pretty much acknowledged as the single horse in Derby that had significant authentic trouble that inhibited his ability to impact the race. Nobody else, it seems, can claim that, but
right.
Creator really can't. Gunrunner, I was interested to see what they were going to do with Gunrunner, because he came back to the racetrack very sharp Thursday of after Derby, and I get a rare opportunity to talk to, you know, Scott Blasi and got a pretty good view into the barn. And Gunrunner was doing well, but I think their decisions are more in respect of the favorite than anything else. I think they feel they can beat him. And
right.
That might be a reasonable approach.
I think Steve's got a loaded hand for later in the year, perhaps, and Creator, I think, is a very legitimate horse for the Belmont, not just because he's come from behind her, but he'll have the 5 weeks, and like you said, he had legitimate trouble at the head of the stretch being knocked sideways when he was making his second move in the race at that point in time. And also, I think that Gunrunner's got a big summer ahead of him. I think he's kind of a horse who is patented for the Haskell. He seems like a horse who will be a very tough horse in the Haskell if everything is still going well by the time we hit late summer in New Jersey. Definitely one to keep an eye on. Steve Bick from At the Races on Sirius XM joining us here in Night School as always. And Steve, before we let you go, I want to see, have you hammered down anything in the handicapping arena for the Black Eyed Susan at this stage of the week?
I've got some ideas, and it's a race that is going to go through the obvious players. I mean, it's not necessarily a place, it seems, that you're going to have some, you know, wild-eyed ideas. I mean, basically, Landover Sea and Go Maggie Go, they come into it, you know, as the overwhelmingly likely winners. There's a couple of horses at decent prices, a couple of 6-to-1 players. Peter Yurton is bringing She's a Warrior.
Right.
And I think she's got a little bit of form to recommend her. The filly of Pletcher's, that Kinsley Kisses, has kind of surprised me a little bit already. And she seems poised for a forward move. 6-to-1's too low of a price on her, frankly. But I get the sense that this Black Eyed Susan, you know, pretty much goes through the obvious, and Landover Sea come out of the Oaks certainly as strong as her stablemate has in terms of Nyquist coming out of the Derby. The more interesting races in terms of 3-year-old fillies are the Sprint Race and the Turf Race. That Hilltop is out of this world. If people are talking about 14 fillies in the Black Eyed Susan, forget
right.
that. The 14 fillies in the Hilltop, where there's a couple of big double-digit prices. You got Thundering Sky for George Weaver. If she runs back to that performance that she just flashed on the turf last time, she's a player in here. And Ben Colebrook, who I'm a huge fan of, he's got Princess Princess. She's outposted and is going to have to work out a trip. Daniel Centeno gets the call, and she's going to have to figure out a way to save some ground. But she's the 13 horse. She's 12-to-1, and both of those are, to me, major players with the two obvious types. Tommy Proctor's got Family Meeting, 4-to-1, and Miss Katie May, the Irish bred for Graham Motion, second start in North America.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Ortiz, two of the favorites. The horse I'm kind of against, I think, a little, is that spin a miss? I don't understand why she's supposed to be so special at 9-2. But I'll start with the 4-1 shot and the 5-1, and go from there. You mentioned Steve Asmussen. Make sure you look at the Miss Preakness late on the card. The Miss Preakness goes off as the 13th race. One True Kiss is 15-1. She's going to get a huge pace set up in here. Mm-hmm. There is just a ton of speed signed on in this race. And One True Kiss, another horse that if she runs back to her most recent effort, she's got a huge shot in here at $30 or more. You get Le Perou, and he certainly knows how to time it, late arrival. There'll be plenty of pace to chase. So One Last Kiss for me, the 7 at 15-1 in that Miss Preakness.
Let me do a quick review of some of the picks that we've given out on the Friday card, because I know fans listening don't have the past performances in some cases for all of these races, but Stan Salter's long shot bet of the day was in the ninth race on Friday at Pimlico, the DuPont, and that was on the long shot America, number 7. So race number 9, Stan's long shot play of the day from Pimlico was the 7 America. Then Steve in the ninth race tomorrow, ninth race number 7 America on Friday, and then in Friday's 10th race, the Hilltops Stakes. Steve Bick just told you about a couple long shot plays in there, the 7 Thundering Sky and the 13 Princess Princess. And then Steve also gave you a long shot play in the 13th race on Friday. 13th race on Friday, the Steve Asmussen trainee, One True Kiss. Race 13, number 7. So some long shot plays there from our guest tonight. Steve, enjoy the next couple days in Baltimore. I look forward to seeing you on Thursday morning and spending some time there at Old Hilltop. We'll be listening to the radio show in the mornings and following you on Steve_Bick at Twitter with all the latest updates. Thanks for joining us tonight, and enjoy the rest of your week.
My pleasure, Jeremy. Good luck, everybody. Enjoy Preakness.
All right. Steve Bick from SiriusXM's At the Races with Steve Bick. You can catch that weekdays from 9 to noon on SiriusXM and at SteveBick.com, free live streaming at his website each day. We'll be back with our third and final segment. We're going to run a little overtime tonight, and that's a good thing. Caitlin Bradar up next to give her observations on this Preakness field.
Night School is brought to you by TwinSpires.com, the official online wagering home of the Kentucky Derby and the popular TwinSpires players pools. And by BrizNet, the official past performance provider to Night School. Check out the exceptional and exclusive PPs endorsed by Night School at BrizNet.com.
$2 million National Handicapping Championship Tour today and plan your trip to Las Vegas. Visit NHCTour.com for details.
I've never experienced anything like it. I thought to myself, this could be today. Why not today? And it was. The horse went from last to first and won by a nose. Winning the NHC changed my life. It never would have happened without TwinSpires.com. I won a TwinSpires qualifying tournament and went on to take the $1 million prize. Play at TwinSpires.com and you could be the next one to hit it big.
Night School is proudly presented each week by Woodbine Entertainment, featuring Woodbine Racetrack and Mohawk Raceway. The 2016 Thoroughbred racing season runs April through December. And by Mountaineer Casino Racetrack and Resort, home of the Grade 2 West Virginia Derby, to be held this summer on August 6th.
Welcome back to Night School, and we head now to Charm City with the most charming member of the Night School team, Caitlin Bradar. She's in Baltimore and hunkered down for the weather in Maryland. Caitlin, welcome in.
Hey, you know what? The good news about the weather, it changes. So we're going to hope that that the rain that we've been experiencing throughout the day, really all day today, I think all day, Tuesday is going to move out and be no problem at all. That's what I'm going with at this point.
Yeah, and then there's another system that says 90% to come back for Saturday. So we'll hang on that 10% if we can, and look for good conditions. Hey, let's take the assumption, because I know everybody is starting with this, and let's get that kind of out of the way. Let's take the assumption we do come up with wet weather for the Preakness on Saturday. Exaggerator obviously has run well on and off track. We know Cherry Wine has won a race on and off track. Also, the long shot Abiding Star has won on and off track. Do you change your handicapping at all if things are in wet conditions on Saturday?
You know, the only time I would change it would be if I knew for a fact that a horse couldn't handle it. And in this case, I really don't see too many examples of that. You know, especially with a horse like Nyquist as the favorite coming off the Derby win, though he's never run on he did run on a good track and won pretty easily. So there's no negative at this point that you can use as a reason to throw a horse out. So I just go with my handicapping the way I know it and the way it would play probably if it were fast track too. You know, maybe you change a little bit in terms of an emphasis on, say, speed or a running style. But in this case, and I think much like last year, had I known that the conditions were going to be what they were for American Pharoah, I still would have handicapped the race exactly the same, and I'm probably going to do it this year too.
Let's go to the Kentucky Derby. We really haven't had a chance to get your postscript on the Derby horses and what to make of them moving forward, and now is the perfect time to do so with the 1-2 finishers, Nyquist and Exaggerator, returning for a rare rematch in the Preakness. We don't get the 1-2 finishers that often back in the Preakness in the last decade or so. And then also you have the horses out of the Kentucky Derby. Lonnie would be the other one coming out of the Derby. So three Derby alumni. Let's take them one by one. Let's start with the Japanese Invader, Lonnie. We'll work in backwards order here. What did you make of Lonnie's Kentucky Derby and his chances moving forward?
You know, he ran the way I expected him to, which is probably better than a lot of people expected, but still not good enough to be a factor with our top horses. You know, the distance, I think, helped him. He is able to run at a mile and a quarter. I just think he's a cut below, and that's kind of where he finished, which was, you know, middle of the pack. He beat half the horses, maybe by virtue of distance, but I don't think he necessarily moves forward that dramatically off that race, and I kind of see him running a similar race and kind of finishing toward the middle of this field too.
The connections after the race saying if they brought a different horse to the Derby the next time, they bring a faster one. And I think that kind of I think that kind of summed it up in any language. That was quite telling at the end of the Kentucky Derby. But Lonnie expected to be one of those three horses returning from the Derby. Second on that list, obviously the number two finisher on Derby Day, Exaggerator. Your opinion of his Derby trip?
Well, he surpassed my expectations. He really kind of went back to the form that got him the two-year-old championship and that carried him through the beginning of the season. You know, good performances. I had kind of gotten off his bandwagon after he was beaten in the San Felipe. And though he ran a great race in the Santa Anita Derby, I was sort of thinking that he was flattered by the way the race came together and by his by the slop. Now, he's one horse that with the sloppy, if it's sloppy on Preakness Day, then that really improves his chances. I do think it's interesting that, you know, I didn't see that the excuses that the traffic really interfered with his ability to run a good race or his best race. So I'm not of the opinion that had he had a different trip, he would have been a winner. I think he was second best to Nyquist, which was better than I thought he would be going into it. And I do think he's a legitimate horse coming into the Preakness as a contender for sure. He has to be respected.
It's been over 20 years since the Derby runner-up has come back and won at Pimlico. It's kind of a rare thing. Happened a couple times in the 90s. But for Exaggerator to turn the tables, Kent DeSormo, the jockey, is a guy who knows his way around Pimlico better than anyone in this field and as well as anybody in the last 20, 30 years in Maryland. I mean, he absolutely dominated the circuit in his youth. Do you think DeSormo's experience at Pimlico gives him any sort of advantage in this race to... You know, he only needs to make up about a length and a half. I mean, he got beat a length and a half and a length and a quarter the last two times Exaggerator took on Nyquist. It's not like he's got to make up six lengths. Can a rider make up a length and a half?
You know, I don't think so. But huh? I think that he can definitely get – I don't think that he can make up a length and a half. I don't think a rider can do that, even the Hall of Fame rider. But I think that his knowledge of the track and the horse and his confidence will put him in the right spot so that if anybody makes a mistake or has an off day, he would certainly be in the prime position to take advantage of that. So that's where I look at it. I also look at the fact that he was – so far back in the Derby in a situation that I think didn't necessarily favor it. And while you typically think of the Preakness as a race that works more toward horses who have tactical speed, I think he actually is benefited by more pace in this race than we saw in the Derby. And so he could find a little bit better position. And obviously Kent's knowledge of Preakness and Pimlico is going to be a plus, but again, I don't think any rider can make up a length and a half myself. I think the horse has to do that.
Exaggerator, one of those finalists for the two-year-old championship, like you mentioned from last year, and not much has changed. I mean, you had Exaggerator, you have Nyquist. They were on the radar going all the way back to last October and November, and not much has changed. We get to Pimlico and Nyquist coming off the Kentucky Derby. Your impressions of how things went for him in Louisville?
But, you know, kind of the way I thought they would. I mean, I picked him after the Florida Derby. He did nothing to dissuade me, and he continued to run up to those expectations. And I know a lot of people picked against him, even though they felt that he was the logical choice. And, you know, I think he just knows how to win. He's a horse that has that competitiveness and that adaptability, which is very rare. And I think that'll serve him well in the Preakness. You know, I don't see anything from a distant view. I don't see any real changes or dramatic changes off of the Derby. I will say that after the race, I was struck by how tired he was. I thought he was a horse who really put it all out on the racetrack to win the Derby. And I'm wondering what kind of effect, if any, that'll have on him going into the Preakness. But that said, usually this is the easier one of the three. Mm-hmm. The mile and a quarter and the traffic and the circumstances of the Derby make it a challenging test all its own. And then obviously the Belmont Stakes with the distance and the fact that it comes at the end of that grueling trail kind of combined to make that so difficult in and of itself. But I just feel like this one is probably going to be the easiest for Nyquist. And given his running style, the fact that he's a horse that can show speed if it's needed, but he sat four lengths off a very fast pace in the Derby. He's come from way out of it as he did in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. So I haven't seen what you can throw at him that knocks this horse off of the winning track. So, you know, so far so good, and I think he'll be the horse to beat again.
You mentioned he appeared tired at the end of the Kentucky Derby. You mean like in the gallop out and the pull up and that sort of thing, or in the days after the Derby that you witnessed?
No, more not in the days after, because he really didn't do anything. And in fairness, he shipped, so it's hard to tell. And in right now, he's had a fairly light type of a training routine, which I think is by design. But he did sort of going into the race too, a real contrast to O'Neill's other horse. But I felt like after in the gallop out, and especially when he came back to the winner's circle, he mm-hmm. just, if you look, he sort of hangs his head, and he sort of, you know, I thought he was a horse who really gave his all in that performance, probably more than he'd ever given before. And, you know, if you look at the time, I mean, the raw time is quite a bit faster than American Pharoah did in the Derby last year because they ran so fast early, and he was a part of that equation. I mean, he was four lengths off the leader at one point, but he was close early, then settled, then came on again. So at various points, he was very much involved in that pace battle that I think was a testament to how good he is in his ability to still win the race, despite the fast early fractions. But I think that can take something out of a horse. I still think, though, that he's such a good horse, and he seems to be doing things the right way and showing good signs and recovering nicely from the Preakness that or from the Derby rather going into the Preakness that he should be able to put together, you know, put forth another top or very good effort anyway. And he continues to, you know, kind of everything has been like a basic steady progression with him rather than these huge leaps forward. And I kind of think that'll turn out to be the same thing again for him. And, you know, sometimes a horse can get tired and then come back and run even better off of it and for the effort.
So those are the three coming out of the Kentucky Derby and what we think moving forward. Let's talk about some of the new faces in this year's Preakness. The horses who were aimed towards the Kentucky Derby didn't make it into the field and now are rerouted towards the Preakness, being Lauban, also Cherry Wine. Those were the two horses from the also eligible list. And then you had Fellowship, who would have been on the AE list, but the Connections decided to go in the Pat Day Mile on entry day instead of being on the AE list for the Kentucky Derby. So there you had three horses that were basically trained to run 2 weeks ago. They were primed to run their race back on May 7th. Now, because of circumstances, are redirected here to May 21st. Any advantage or disadvantage to that change in the method for them?
Well, I don't know that it's either. I think that, you know, sometimes you could argue when there's a fresh horse coming in the case of Lauban or Cherry Wine, who didn't race. But in the case of Fellowship, he raced in the Pat Day Mile instead. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it would depend on the horse. But in this case, I didn't feel Lauban was necessarily quite good enough to win this race. He hasn't crossed the finish line first. As a maiden, I think he kind of has a disadvantage. And though he has a pedigree to really be a good horse, especially around distances, he would have to, in my opinion, up his game so much. I think he's a fringe player. I just don't see him winning the race, but I do think Lauban is an interesting play in exotics. But right now it looks like he could be a part of the pace scenario, which, as I've said before, was probably going to be quite a bit faster, or at least let's put it this way, more speed horses, more horses that really seem to have their best game when they're forwardly placed, and Lauban one of them. So I think he may be at a little bit of a disadvantage just the way this race comes together. Cherry Wine, I'm just not a horse that I've ever fallen in love with. He's run some good races, but I just have never seen. I think he's the type that sits back, makes one late run, and has gotten very fortunate to get a piece of some very good races. But again, I just don't see him suddenly jumping up and running that lifetime best that he would have to do to put him among the top horses. And then Fellowship, I don't know what to do with, because I really liked him a lot. I like him less having run in the Pat Day Mile, which really wasn't his distance, but he might have run a deceivingly good race to range up to second behind Sharp Azteca, who was really very impressive, and so was Forever Mo. He kind of flattened out. It's not his distance, but you kind of wonder if that takes a little of the edge out going forward to a race like the Preakness Stakes. But that said, he's a horse that I respect, and I wouldn't have loved him in the Derby, so I'm not sure that I'm going to take him in the Preakness, but I'm going to kind of watch him and also see the odds on him for maybe an exotics play underneath some of the key horses for the win.
A couple of the other new faces in the Preakness Stakes. We're talking with Caitlin Bradar of TVG and Horse Player Now. She's on site in Maryland getting ready for the Preakness Stakes on Saturday. Uncle Lino and Stradivari. Uncle Lino from California has knocked heads with the better horses out west, and we know the west has been awful strong, winning three of the last four Kentucky Derbies. And Stradivari, who's won two straight. Todd Pletcher rarely brings a horse to Pimlico. I found this comments about how glaringly appreciative he was of the Preakness in the press notes in recent days. Kind of funny because he hasn't run horses here in the Preakness over the years, and he had a lot of reasons or excuses or you know, the explanation for it on why he hasn't run that many horses in the Preakness over the years. But this one seems to kind of fit the mold that if he's going to be good enough, that this would be a good spot for him. Give us your thoughts on Uncle Lino and Stradivari.
Well, Uncle Lino, I think, is a talented horse, but again, I'm wondering about this particular spot in this race with the way the pace is going to shake out. I think he'll be part of that, and that concerns me about his ability to finish with some of these others. You know, he was a bit behind Dancing Candy, More Spirit, and Exaggerator, 10 lengths behind them. So to my mind, he sort of has to have the ideal setup to be a factor, and I'm not sure he would get that here, but I think he is a very nice horse. Stradivari is the main interesting horse to me. I don't know quite what to do with him. I saw him break his maiden at Gulfstream. He was impressive that day, though the field was really nothing to write home about. He did what he was supposed to do. It was only his second start, and it was a mile and a 16th turf race that was rained off the grass. And, you know, it wasn't remarkable, but it was impressive what he did and the way he ran, which was very professional effort, set off the pace in a track that usually favors speed, and when asked, just kind of exploded and you know, won going away. And then he came back off the layoff, and he ran almost the identical race at Keeneland in Allowance Company in his first try against winners. And that's not easy to do. If I hadn't seen one or the other races, I wouldn't take either one of them on their own merit. But the fact that he put both those races together tells me that, you know, maybe he has quite a bit of talent. He's continued to train really well. He has a pedigree to go on, especially by Medaglia d'Oro. And, you know, I just don't know what to make of him, because I don't think he beat anything in either instance. And there have been a lot of horses who just took to the Keeneland track and ran big races. So they kind of were the exceptions, or they weren't able to carry that form forward to other tracks. But the fact that Todd is bringing him to this race tells me that he thinks that there may be something more to the horse as well, because this is a huge leap up, and there would be a lot of other opportunities for a talented three-year-old to run around two turns. The fact that, especially given his record in the Preakness Stakes, that he's taking this step, I think very interesting, and I think you have to really respect him. I haven't seen the horse in person yet, but I will be really eager to see him, because he is a very nice-looking horse, and as I said, just very professional, kind of belying his experience. But, you know, you just don't see horses that break their maiden by 11 lengths and then come back first try against winners off the layoff at Keeneland and win by 14. I can't think of another horse that I've seen do something like that. So that's where I'm not quite sure what to make of him, because the competition he's beaten, it's really nothing, but at the same time, it's sort of the way he's done it.
Stradivari, one to keep an eye on. And follow Caton on Twitter, at C. Bradar, her first initial last name, C. Bradar, at C. Bradar on Twitter. I'm sure when she gets her eyes on Stradivari, when he gets to Pimlico and starts his training, that there will be some good late-week updates there on Twitter from Caton on how Stradivari is progressing. Definitely the horse who's got the intrigue going in to this edition of the Preakness, for sure. Of the other horses in the race, Caton, there's really, you know, I don't think that Awesome Speed is a major contender in here. Collected for Bob Baffert, it is Bob Baffert. And then you've got Abiding Star coming in from Parks, where the quarantine was lifted earlier today, and that runner will be able to make it on time to Pimlico, with some special exceptions made to keep the horse population safe after that viral outbreak at Parks back on the 1st of April. And so they're going to take precautions with that runner, Abiding Star. Of Abiding Star, Awesome Speed, and Collected, any of those bring any interest to you?
You know, I think that for the most part, style works against them again, although Collected is somewhat interesting because he seems to be an improving colt. But, you know, again, I don't think I'm really in love with them in these particular spots. But Collected is a very fast horse, and he's put together two nice stakes wins in a row and in very different circumstances at Sunland Park and then at Keeneland, and he might be a little better than I'm giving him credit for being. He's really only run one poor effort in his entire career, and that was in the Southwest Stakes. So more conservative route for Bob Baffert with a horse like him is interesting, and you don't see it very often. So he's one I'm not quite sure what to do with, but I might consider. Awesome Speed, I just don't think wants any part of this distance at this level of competition. And I'm a kind of a person that doesn't like changes in plans that dramatically, not knowing whether you're going to get to run or not, not knowing whether you're going to get out of Parks in time for a race like the Preakness.
Right.
This doesn't seem to me the ideal way to come into it. So I'd probably take a bit of a stand against in that case, too.
Abiding Star's got one thing going for him. He's by Uncle Mo, and it's been his year. I mean, Nyquist,
yeah, exactly.
and Lauban, and there are several horses in this particular Preakness, again, by Uncle Mo, and he had the three horses in on Derby Day. So that's a look at the Preakness Stakes. Let's put a little bow on the Preakness, though. The horses you're considering on the win end at this point, to me, the way it sounds, would be Nyquist, possibly Stradivari, and Exaggerator. Anything beyond that would be pretty surprising.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's turn our attention to the Friday card now, and Caton will be busy on Friday. It's Ladies' Day on Friday for the Black Eyed Susan. You've been involved in the handicapping challenge there at Pimlico on Fridays in the past. Taking part this year?
Nope, this year I'll be working for TVG all day on Thursday as well as Friday and Saturday. And so we'll let the Marylanders take care of that with, I think Maggie is coming back in for it, as well as Gabby and Janine Edwards.
You really need to stop letting work get into the way of a good habit. On that Friday program, the Black Eyed Susan is the featured race on the card because it's the day for the fillies, and it's the Kentucky Oaks counterpart, if you will, in the state of Maryland. That'll go as the 11th to 14th race is already drawn. You can download free Brist Pass performances for the Black Eyed Susan Stakes as part of our Night School homepage. Go on the Night School homepage. Tonight's study materials not only give you the Preakness probables, but the final pass performances for the Black Eyed Susan Stakes. So we thank Brist for that, the official pass performance provider of Night School and the PPs that I use myself in my handicapping. Caton, as we talk about the Black Eyed Susan, just for a brief overview, you've got the two big fillies coming out of the Kentucky Oaks, Land Over Sea, who finished second, Go Maggie Go, who finished fourth in that race. Anything about the two-week turnaround? We know the boys run well on the two-week turnaround historically from the Derby to the Preakness. There's not a big deal. Do you think it's any different for the fillies?
Yeah, I think it is. We don't see fillies do it quite as often, and I think especially in the springtime, it can be a bit more taxing. And also, you don't have as large a sampling, so to be fair, it would be hard to say conclusively. But I kind of take a stand against those fillies, although in this case, you've got two really good fillies. And, you know, for my money, Land Over Sea has campaigned long and hard, and done a bit more up to this point than Go Maggie Go. So if you were looking at either of these fillies coming out of it, then I think, you know, Go Maggie Go might be the type that she's only had three starts lifetime. So to come back in 2 weeks might not be quite as big a stretch for her as, say, for Land Over Sea, which really traveled a lot and who's run a lot and was geared up for the Kentucky Oaks. And now to come back off of a really good race and run her race again, I don't know, might be a little bit of an overreach. So I'm kind of, while I really liked her in the Kentucky Oaks, I'm going to take kind of a stand against her. And Go Maggie Go, you know, best race, actually, all things considered. I'm not convinced, again, that things would have been different had she had a different trip. Mm-hmm. So I'm still on the fence with her a little bit. I didn't think I really liked her that much going into the race, and then she finished actually pretty fourth. So, you know, maybe she'd be one. But to me, this is really a wide open. This is a great betting race. If you take a stand against those two, you can go in any number of directions. You've got a horse for Peter Urton, who's coming in from California. She's a warrior, ran a good third behind Songbird in a sloppy track, but I think might be sitting on a really good effort. You know, she's still a maiden, but in this case, she has run some outstanding races against really good horses. And she gets Gary Stevens. You have, Midnight on Ancony, who's been inconsistent, but for Larry Jones at her best, I think, sits with these fillies. And she's by Midnight Loose out of an include mare. It's kind of an interesting pedigree for distance of ground here, but I happen to think that she's going to really excel and run a better race than anybody expects her to. She also has really technical speed, and unlike the Preakness, there's not quite as much speed in the Black Eyed Susan as the boys will see. That could be an advantage. A couple fillies. Drew is tough. I liked Kinsley Kisses a bit. Bird in the Beaumont. I'm stretching out for the first time she saw Congrats, but she draws kind of a tricky post in 10. And the same for CC, who is by Curlin and is the type that should be improving. And but she draws post 13 or 14. I think that's a really tough post they have to navigate from.
A mile and an eighth the distance of the Black Eyed Susan, and the spread in weights, the high weights carry 122, and the allowance gets horses all the way down to 116, so a 6-pound spread in weights for some of these fillies if you want to take a shot against some of the favorites. Just throw a couple stats at you. The last Kentucky Oaks alumnae to win the Black Eyed Susan was Silver Bullet Day in 1999, and she was pretty good. And also, favorites have only won one of the last 10 Black Eyed Susans. So it's not a race that you necessarily have to set settle on the chalk. And again, with that 6-pound weight spread between some of the favorites, Landover Sea and Go Maggie Go both carry 122. Some of the other contenders, if you folks want to take a reach, will carry only 116 in there. That could be beneficial and on what might be a drying out racetrack, because it's supposed to rain throughout the week. Friday is supposed to be pretty decent weather-wise, though, the way it looks. So that could be a drying out heavy racetrack. And again, could be a situation where some tired horses getting a heavier weight tote, maybe it sets up for an upset. I think that one probably looks a lot less formful than what we're looking at potentially in the Preakness Stakes. Also on the Friday card, Kate, I want to get one final thought from you. The Pimlico Special, it's on the undercard, the 46th running of this race. The race's history goes back, you know, 80 years, but it's been off and on in its history. Now a grade 3, but over time has been a grade 1 and a real elite race. This year's field has kind of that grade 2, grade 3 kind of feel about it. But Noble Bird's a horse I've got to ask you about, because I thought on Derby Day, he was set to run a pretty good race in stakes on the Derby undercard. He didn't fire at all. You've got a good horse coming off a terrible race on 2 weeks. Can we draw a line through that? Or is Mark Cassie just kind of hoping and reaching here with Noble Bird?
Well, I don't think he's reaching, but I think there are some reasons that you could draw a line through that last race, the Ali Sheba. He didn't get out of the gate well, and from there on, it just things never came together for him, but he also never ran. I didn't like that. He's a very tough horse. Mark described him as a very tough horse to ride, and I think that could be a real detriment. And he draws toward the outside 7 of 8 in this race. I think he's just a tricky and headstrong type of horse. And I'm kind of concerned. To me, he looked like he was getting out a bit in addition to not running. So I don't like him in this spot, but I will understand why some people would draw a line through the race. I don't think Mark is just taking a shot. I really think he believes he's capable of much better, and obviously that last race didn't take anything out of him. But I kind of am playing against, though at his best he's certainly talented enough to win. You've got a horse like Paige McKinney, who absolutely loves Maryland racing in general, and who just continues to do absolutely nothing wrong. I mean, second to Stanford last out in the Charlestown Classic. Stanford is still iffy. I don't know for sure whether Todd made an ultimate decision whether to run him. He also has Savoy Stomp in there, and I know Pletcher talked about maybe not running Stanford, but they had the benefit of entering because entries came so early, and kind of take a look at the race and see how conditions shake out for him. If he runs, you know, he has to be respected. He has great early speed. He draws a good post and is interesting. I don't love him at this distance of ground, 1 3/16 myself, but right. He ran a huge race last time out. And the horse that I really like a little bit in there is Idolo Portino for Ignacio Correas, who's coming back to Maryland, where he trained kind of for many years as a private trainer for Sagamore. And, you know, this is an interesting horse. He ran atrocious in the Elkhorn, but had a pretty good U.S. debut when he finished third at High Odds behind Upstart. I think he's better than he's going to get credit for. It's a reach. He's got a long way to go to be as good as Stanford or Paige McKinney, but he's run against really good horses in Argentina. And it's kind of intriguing to me because he will be big odds. He draws a very nice post in the middle of the field and on any given day is capable of a big run, especially at a distance.
And just one final attaboy, if you can. Ben's Cat going in the Jim McKay Turf Sprint. The old man, as good as he once was, we'll find out. I didn't think he was good enough last year to win this race, and he miraculously finished up the fence to do it. Ben's Cat returning, just kind of what he means to the day.
You know what? Just for me to get to see him again is always a treat, and for fans as well, because he is just an iron horse as far as the versatility and coming back year after year. And he will be the fan favorite of the day, for sure. I don't know what it would be to have a big showcase day in Maryland and not have Ben's Cat car. And I also think, though he might not be as good as he was in his prime, I think he might be better than he was last year. His last race was very good. So
yeah.
I'm thrilled to get to see Ben's Cat. And, you know, that win, albeit against your company, allowance company, but was you know, I thought that showed something about him. And, you know, how do you not like horses started 54 times and won 31 races? You got to root for a horse like that.
Yeah, going to the Preakness and seeing Ben's cat is like going to the casino and Willie Mays being your greeter or something like that. You know, it just feels right when you get to see the legend on the way in. And we wish him all the best in the Jim McKay Turf Sprint. Caton Bradar, thanks for your insights. We'll be back with Night School with the conclusion in just a few moments. From final words from our sponsors coming up right now.
Night School is brought to you by Woodbine Entertainment, home of the prestigious Queen's Plate. Follow the countdown to the 157th Queen's Plate on July 3rd. And by Mountain Air Casino Racetrack and Resort, conducting live racing 5 nights per week, April through November. First post, Saturday through Wednesday, is 7 p.m. Eastern. Special consideration for Night School is provided by HorsePlayerNow.com Buzz Report, where 10% of every purchase goes directly to the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation to assist former racehorses.
To get buzzed. The Horse Player Now Buzz Report brings top handicappers from around the world from our email box to yours. Our starting nine includes such renowned horse players as Caton Bradar, Brian W. Spencer, Jerry Schottenkirk, Candace Hare, Brian Natto, Terry Terrell, Jeff Nahill, DC Dino Herrera, and Jeremy Plunk. Put your starting nine together every single day with daily, monthly, and quarterly plans that reduce the price to as low as just $2 a day. We say it's our eyes and your prize, and we promise nothing but the best. Honesty and trust, no other promises. Pick up the buzz today. And we thank you for listening to this 10th week of Night School in the 2016 season, and our Preakness and Black-Eyed Susan preview is complete. We thank our guest tonight, Stan Salter of the Maryland Jockey Club and Maryland Horse Radio, Steve Bick of At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM, and Caton Bradar of TVG and Horse Player Now. It's been a great preview. We hope you have good luck this weekend at Old Hilltop. If you're in the area, come see us in the infield. The Night School Tour makes its 2016 return to the infield on Preakness Day. We start bright and early at 8 a.m. We'll be out there throughout the entire day teaching fans in the Wagering 101 tent presented by ExpressBet. Get live seminars from all your favorite Horse Player Now handicappers as we will be there throughout the course of Preakness Saturday. On behalf of everybody involved with Night School and our dean, Jerry Schottenkirk, in the chat, I'm Jeremy Plunk. Good night and good racing at the Preakness.